Welcome to episode 167 of the Fredcast Cycling Podcast for September 19th, 2010. My name is David, and I'm a Fred. On this week's pre-Interbike edition of the Fredcast, it is confirmed Interbike is moving out of Las Vegas after this year's show. Kristen Armstrong becomes a mom. Lots of pro cycling news, including the Vuelta a España and the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships. Plus, of course, what would a Fredcast be without doping news? Plus, PodSafe cycling music. So sit back, relax, and if you're riding your bike, hammer just a little bit harder, because here comes the Fredcast. Hey, fellow Freds, welcome back to another edition of the Fredcast. This one a little bit shorter than last time as I get ready to head to Las Vegas for the annual Interbike Trade Show. It happens every year. It's trade only, but the great thing is I get to bring it to you here. Now, the way that I bring it to you on the Fredcast is I bring you Interbike TV. I've been asked once again to host their From the Show Floor video segments. We'll be doing one day at the outdoor demo and 3 days at the indoor portion of Interbike, and we'll be visiting lots of booths and bringing you really a great overview of the show, giving you a sense of what's new, giving you a sense of what happens at the show, and I believe we're going to be doing some after-hours activities as well and bringing those to you so that you can get a good sense of what we're doing. Now, I'm going to be putting some of those into the Fredcast feed, so watch for those over the next few days. Probably won't be until toward the end of the week, and then they'll probably be coming for a few days after the show has ended. The rest I'll be putting on the Fredcast.com website, and I'll be providing you with information on that on the show via Twitter and on Facebook, and of course via the website itself at www.thefredcast.com. And one of those after-hours activities we're going to be participating in is the second annual Bike Tweetup. You can get information on this at biketweetup.blogspot.com or just by clicking the link in the show notes. This is Tuesday night, September the 21st at 6 p.m. You do not have to have an Interbike badge to get in. You do not have to be a member of the trade. Simply come on up. It's at the Palazzo, which is right by the Venetian, right there on the strip. It's at the Emeril Lagasse Stadium in the lower level of the Palazzo. It begins at 6 p.m. And this is a great opportunity for you to rub elbows with your fellow Freds, with lots of manufacturers and sort of social networking and social media types that you've all come to know through the Fredcast. And it's also a great opportunity for you to support two fantastic causes, the American Diabetes Association and the National Multiple Sclerosis Foundation. And you can do that through the great charity raffle that we've got. We've got prizes from so many companies. There's just too many to mention, but trust me, we've got some amazing prizes. You're going to want to come to the TweetUp. So go ahead and check it out, biketweetup.blogspot.com. We're going to have a lot of fun, and I hope that I'll see you there. Well, since Interbike does start tomorrow, it would make sense that we would begin the show with an Interbike story, something that we talked about last week, which really was just rumor at the time, but which has now been confirmed by the show organizers themselves in a September 18th press release. They're quoted as saying, quote, "In an effort to continue to best serve the overall needs of the bicycle industry, Interbike Management has decided to hold the 2011 installment of its international trade show August 8th through 12th, 2011, more than a month sooner than this year's show in Anaheim, California. The date and location realignment comes after months of collecting feedback from bike industry retailers, manufacturers, and partners through surveys, forums, and discussions." Now, I remember when I first got into the bike industry, there were a myriad number of shows. We had Milan, Cologne, Friedrichshafen just started. We were in Long Beach, New York, Anaheim, Philadelphia. And over the years, oh, and by the way, let's not forget the competing show that the American bicycle industry came out with to compete with Interbike that was also held in Las Vegas. Now, over the years, there's been a shakeout in the trade show arena here in the United States, and Interbike has continued to win that shakeout. And of course, over in Europe, Eurobike from Friedrichshafen destroyed the competition there as well. Interbike, I'm sure, knows what it's doing by changing the dates, and I guarantee we're going to be talking to our friend Rich Kelly about this at the show as we do our Spokesman live TV show, so watch for that, and of course it will be also available on the Spokesman website several days after the show. Now, you'll recall back in June that I had the opportunity to go to press camp in Deer Valley here in Utah, and that was an opportunity for a lot of manufacturers to introduce new products. You'll recall that we spoke with Lance Kamasaska from Lifeboat Events, the organizers of that event, and he told us that more and more manufacturers are introducing products earlier and earlier, and obviously Interbike is responding to this trend by moving to August of next year. I have to say that I also think that there's also a possibility, probably not too far-fetched, that Interbike is responding to the fact that so many new products are introduced at Eurobike this year, making Interbike sort of the industry's second most important show if you look at product releases. And show director Andy Tompkins reflected that in his comments when he said, quote, "Interbike is the industry show and reflects its natural business cycle. Over the last few years, we've carefully followed the continuing trend of bicycle manufacturers introducing products earlier to the market. Through extensive discussions with retailers, manufacturers, distributors, and our key partners, the associations that represent them," and he listed all of the associations, "the consensus suggests that migrating show dates to early August is in the best long-term interest of the industry. Further, Las Vegas has been a great host city for the last 12 years, and the Sands Convention Center and Boulder City have been amazing partners, but the industry has expressed a desire for a change in venue." And I think that last part comes from the fact that a lot of folks in the industry have said Las Vegas is not the most bike-friendly, the most healthy city in the world. I don't think anybody's going to argue with either of those statements. And by moving to Orange County, California, it's definitely a healthier environment, definitely a place where bikes are welcomed, lots of great bike lanes, even bike traffic signals in Orange County. So it should be a nice welcome change. We'll sort of take a temperature of people at the show and see how they feel about it. But this is now confirmed, Interbike next year in August in Anaheim. For those of you who follow women's cycling, the name Kristen Armstrong will not be a new one to you. Kristen Armstrong, an Olympic gold medalist, world time trial champion, winner of the U.S. National Cycling Championship, and so many other palmares in her career, has a new one, something that she announced on Twitter on September 15th when she said, "Lucas William Savola was born at 4:30 a.m., 8 pounds, 6 ounces, and 22 inches. She completed by saying, "Love being a mom." And yes, she included a photo of the little bundle of joy. Now, interestingly enough, Kristen Armstrong retired from cycling last year. Now she is a mom, and shortly after announcing her motherhood and the arrival of her new son, Lucas, news reports started surfacing that Kristen Armstrong is also considering a comeback to professional cycling. She told the Associated Press that she and her husband, Joe Savola, are, quote, "definitely going to enjoy the weeks and days ahead with their new little addition," unquote, but that she's not ruling out a comeback. So congratulations to Kristen and her entire family on the arrival of their son, and frankly, I think a lot of us would welcome Kristen back into professional cycling to see what more she can do as a cyclist. I got to be honest, this next story is very sad and definitely heartbreaking. We talk a lot here on the Fredcast, unfortunately, about the tragedies that occur with cyclists on the road at the hands of motorists. This one occurred in Enumclaw, Washington. Enumclaw is just east of Tacoma, Washington, and it took place after a celebration for Stephen Relford's birthday, and he had just gotten off the phone with his mother earlier in the evening telling her that he promised he would not get behind the wheel of a car because he knew that he'd be drinking that night. And so he kept his promise to his mother, and when he left the celebration for his birthday, he got on his bicycle and began to ride home. A few minutes later, he was hit by a car and killed. The car was driven by one of his best friends, Jeffrey M. Godley. When Godley got out of the car and realized not only that he had hit a cyclist, but that he had hit his super good friend, he went onto the side of the road, pulled out a gun, and killed himself. According to Relford's father, quote, "They knew each other like brothers and sisters. That's why this thing turned tragic with Jeff taking his life." According to Relford's mother, the situation was, quote, "absolutely tragic," and she does not hold any ill will toward Godley. She said that she and her son had been friends for years, and she described Godley as a great kid who had been over to their house frequently, as early as just a few days before that, helping her husband put new brakes on his car. Unfortunately, according to law enforcement officials, alcohol was definitely involved in both the case of the driver and the cyclist. This is a truly tragic accident that took two lives, neither of which needed to be taken. If you need a reminder not to drink and drive, if you need a reminder not to drink and ride your bicycle, and you know, sometimes we joke about that here on the show, about people getting DUIs or some places they call them DWIs, driving under the influence or driving while intoxicated, citations when they're riding their bikes. It really is no joke. Look at the situation in this case. The next time you think about getting behind the wheel, before you think about getting behind the handlebars, and think twice. There, but for the grace of God, go I. Well, let's move on to professional cycling news. But before we do that, I do need to stop right here and thank our show sponsor, Jensen USA. Don't forget to go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast for the unparalleled selection, the amazing prices, and the customer service that we've been talking about here on the Fredcast for months. And if you want an idea about some of the amazing prices, how about Crank Brothers Candy SL pedals? These are mountain bike pedals, normally $110, right now available for just $50. These combine all the performance of Crank Brothers Egg Beater clipless pedals with the stability of a platform. So it's great for off-road, cross-country, or all mountain bikes. These are small platform clipless pedals. They've got 6 degrees of float. They're fully rebuildable, and they include cleats, although they do fit on SPD 2-bolt pattern. Approximate weight, about 294 grams. An amazing price on a great set of pedals. And where else than Jensen USA? Go ahead and check them out. That's Jensen USA, JensenUSA.com/thefredcast, or just go to thefredcast.com and click on their ad on the right-hand side of the page. We thank Jensen USA for their support of the Fredcast, and as always, we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, the Vuelta a España, the third of the three grand tours every year, concluded today in Spain. Before we talk about who won, I want to talk about Stage 14. Because you'll recall that when we last visited here on the Fredcast, I told you that Igor Anton, the Spanish rider from Euskaltel Euskadi, was leading, wearing the leader's red jersey of the Vuelta a España. On stage 14, however, he suffered a tragic crash, breaking his collarbone and having to withdraw from the race in a red jersey that looked like it was torn to shreds. And as a result of that crash and the fact that Vincenzo Nibali finished second on the stage that day, Vincenzo Nibali took over the leader's jersey of the Vuelta a España. And we've talked about this here on the show before. No one wants to take over the leadership of a race as a result of a tragic incident. And Nibali is no exception. He was quoted as saying, quote, "I'm sorry for Anton. It's too bad he crashed. I wanted to battle him in another way than this." But despite the crash and the tragic circumstances, of course, Nibali soldiered on, winning the overall general classification in the 2010 Vuelta a España today. Today's stage, however, was won by Tyler Farah of the United States and the Garmin Transitions team, who pipped Mark Cavendish at the line. Cavendish going for yet another stage win in this year's Vuelta a España, but due to a slight mechanical, Farah took the day. Cavendish won three stages in this year's Vuelta a España and took the green jersey at the end of the overall race, saying, quote, "It's a very special feeling to have got the points competition. I was here looking for stage wins in Spain and to get some form for the Worlds. And little by little, I got into the battle for the points. The Vuelta is different from other races because there are equal points on offer in the mountains and in the flat stages. I'm very happy for HTC Colombia all round. We took five stages, led overall, and we got on the podium as well. It has gone perfectly." And in the general classification, at the end of 21 stages, it was Vincenzo Nibali from Team Liquigas in 87 hours, 18 minutes, and 33 seconds. Second place going to Ezequiel Mosquera from Spain and the Jacobeo Galicia team at 41 seconds back. Third place going to Peter Velitz from Team HTC Colombia, 3 minutes, 2 seconds back. Fourth, Joaquin Rodriguez from Katusha, 4:22 back. And fifth place going to Team Saxo Banks, well, for this race, Frank Schleck from Luxembourg, 4 minutes, 45 seconds back. Meanwhile, here in the United States this weekend, it was time for the U.S. Pro Cycling Championships in Greenville, South Carolina. Yesterday was the individual time trial event, and it was a squeaker. And I have to tell you, both winners in the individual time trial and in the road race are up-and-comers, showing that the United States professional cycling world has a lot to look forward to as we see guys like Lance Armstrong, Levi Leipheimer, George Hincapie hitting the ends of their careers. We've got some real shining stars coming up here in the United States as Taylor Finney from Team Trek Livestrong, Davis Finney, and Connie Carpenter Finney's little boy takes the individual time trial by only 14 one-hundredths of a second over Levi Leipheimer from Team Radio Shack. Third place going to Bernard Van Olden from Team Jelly Belly, powered by Kenda. After the race, Taylor Finney was quoted as saying, quote, "This is probably one of the biggest wins of my career. I get to wear the jersey, the red, white, and blue jersey, for the next full year, my first as a pro." Levi did not look incredibly pleased on the podium, tweeting some jokes to Finney, but he was quoted as saying, quote, "No way I'm going to make an excuse. Taylor was the biggest competitor here and everyone knew it. Taylor is used to starting fast. My advantage is the length, the experience, the pacing. Those are the things I've got on my side. I tried to save a little for the end, but I guess it wasn't enough." Meanwhile, in today's road race, all eyes were on the current Stars and Stripes jersey wearer, George Hincapie, in his hometown, his home turf there in Greenville, South Carolina, to see whether or not George was going to repeat yet again. But once again, it was one of the young guns on the U.S. squad, a teammate of Taylor Finney from Trek Livestrong, taking both races. This went to Benjamin King from Trek Livestrong in 4 hours, 44 minutes, 56.9 seconds. Second place in the road race going to Alex Candelario. Third, to Keel Reinen. Fourth, Chris Horner. And fifth, to Big George Hincapie. Rounding up the top 10, Sean Milne, Matthew Bush, Taylor Finney, Andy Guptill, and Craig Lewis from Columbia High Road. Ben King soloed to victory in today's race and was quoted as saying, quote, "We were going pretty hard at the beginning there. Once I was solo, I had 9 minutes. I was thinking about a lot of motivators. I was praying pretty hard after Paris Mountain, and my prayers got answered." And they must have, because the second and third place winners, the winners of the silver and bronze today, were 1 minute, 34 seconds back of today's winner, Ben King. Well, when it comes to the International Road Racing World Calendar, there are essentially two major events left this year, starting September 29th through October 3rd in Geelong, Australia. It's the UCI Road World Championships. We'll be bringing you coverage of that coming up shortly. And then on October 16th, the final race on the world calendar this year, the Giro di Lombardia, one of those great classics every year. And we talked last week about the fact that Team Radio Shack felt snubbed when they found out through the press that they had not been invited to the Giro di Lombardia. A little bit of backstory here, though. The Giro di Lombardia is put on by RCS Sport, the same people who put on Tirreno Adriatico, and also the same people who put on the Giro d'Italia. And as you may recall, earlier this year, Team Radio Shack decided not to go to the Giro and instead to go to the Tour of California. And it seems RCS Sport's nose has been a little bit out of joint ever since then, and that may be the reason why Team Radio Shack didn't originally get that invite to the Giro di Lombardia. They then went to the Court of Arbitration for Sport, asking them to force RCS Sport to allow Team Radio Shack into the race. RCS Sport backed down, got the UCI to agree to allow one more team in the Giro di Lombardia, and on October 16th, you will indeed see Team Radio Shack at the race. So we'll have more coverage of that in October, but something to look forward to for those of you who may be Team Radio Shack fans. Hey, how many of you remember the scare that occurred in professional cycling in June during the Tour of Switzerland when Kim Kirken from Team Katusha suffered a heart attack and then was put into a coma by doctors to help him in his recovery from that heart attack? And everybody felt that that was it for Kim Kirken's professional cycling career, that he was through. And Team Katusha thought the same thing, and they offered Kim Kirken a staff position with the team. Kirken, however, wants to return to professional cycling and to compete again out on the road, despite the fact that he now has a defibrillator implanted in his chest. If doctors decide that they agree with Kim Kirken and that he can return to professional cycling, he's going to have to do so with a new team, because the team director at Katusha does not believe that this is the right thing for Kim Kirken to do. He was quoted as saying, quote, "It's irresponsible for someone to race now when in June he almost died. It's a time bomb that could go off at any moment. I'm prepared to offer him a job on the team staff, but not as a rider." But put yourself in Kim Kirken's position. Here's a guy who's 32 years old, who has trained much of his life to be a professional cyclist. And to cut his career short at this point has to be not only a major disappointment to him, but also a major potential drain on his and his family's financial well-being. So you've got to understand why he wants to return. Be interesting to see if he does and how he performs. Talked a lot here on the show about Team Saxo Bank. I've told you that they've been my favorite team for a long time, not so much because of the sponsorship or because of Bjarne Riis, but simply because of the roster. I think unlike a lot of, well, maybe, at least in my case, unlike a lot of professional sports where, you know, if you are a New York Yankees fan, you're a New York Yankees fan for life. I don't feel that way about professional cycling teams. I look at their rosters and I say, hey, this is a team that I really like. And in the case of Saxo Bank, when you look at guys like Jens Voigt, Fabian Cancellara, the Schleck brothers, there's a lot of talent on that team, and that's the reason why I was always rooting for them. Well, as you know, Team Saxo Bank is going through a lot of changes. They're going to be adding a new title sponsor, and they've added Alberto Contador to their team for 2011. Meanwhile, the Schleck brothers are leaving for a new team from Luxembourg, and now it also appears, and we'll talk about this in a minute, that Fabian Cancellara is on his way out as well. But Bjarne Riis made some interesting comments about his former star, Andy Schleck, last week after, as we talked about last week, Andy's departure from the Vuelta a España, when he and another rider broke team rules by going out for a drink after team dinner. According to Bjarne Riis, quote, "He still has a lot to learn. I think that what has happened here in the Vuelta has taught him a lot." Contador always gives his maximum in all the races he participates. This is interesting as he starts to compare his former star to his new star. Continuing, well, Andy, as we have seen here in the Vuelta, has a completely different mentality. We cannot demand that all riders are alike, have the same lifestyle, and we must respect everyone for who they are. Andy is not Contador and vice versa. They are two different persons. Alberto is a bit more serious, Andy a bit younger and wilder. I cannot say yet whether it will be easier to work together with Alberto, but it is clear that he has other traits. However, I must first properly get to know him so I can figure out how I can best help him. We will tackle in the coming months. Interesting. I don't know whether this is some sour grapes for the fact that the Schlecks are leaving, whether these are his true feelings, or whether this is cycling's version of smack talk. Nevertheless, some interesting comments out of Bjarne Riis. Also, it should be noted that those former comments were in Spain's El País newspaper, so you wonder whether or not he was talking to the hometown crowd. Meanwhile, quoted in the Danish TV2 Sports News, Bjarne Riis told them, quote, Fabian Cancellara and I have made an agreement that he can be released from his contract. He had one more year left with Saxo Bank. That means he will not be on our team next year. This coming after Cancellara pulled out of the Vuelta a España, shocking team management at Saxo Bank, and they were obviously quite angry with him. Riis continuing saying, quote, I had hoped that it could have happened in a better way. We had hoped for a more elegant ending. The only thing that I could have hoped for is that he would have shown more respect for his teammates and our sponsors. Team director Bradley McGee was quoted as saying, quote, we're extremely disappointed by Fabian's abandon. It's not the way a great champion should behave. He decided to stop for some unknown reason, hurried off to the airport to catch the next flight, and now he's not answering his phone. When he decided to pull the pin on the race, I expressed a very strong opinion about that. I have a feeling that that's an understatement. And I was adamant he should continue, but I can't push him back onto his bike. And finally, what would our pro cycling segment be without, well, without a little bit of doping? Belgian rider Roy Senschen says that he resorted to doping with EPO earlier this year, and as a result of that admission, he is now retiring from cycling after testing positive for the banned substance. Senschen is 29 years old. He was a member of the Milram team, and he had been provisionally suspended and removed from the Vuelta a España after the UCI said on Thursday that he failed an out-of-competition test on August 16th. Now, Senschen says that he took the endurance-boosting hormone because his season had been, quote, a disaster, and he wanted a new contract. He then apologized to everyone who believed in him, and he said, quote, I've done wrong and will suffer the consequences of it. No doubt about that at all. Meanwhile, moving on to Spanish riders, Spanish rider Oscar Sevilla has been provisionally suspended by the UCI for suspected blood doping. This comes after Sevilla was connected to the Operation Puerto scandal 4 years ago. The UCI said that Sevilla tested positive for hydroxyethyl starch in a urine sample taken at the Tour of Colombia last month. Hydroxyethyl starch, I'd never heard of that before, is used to increase blood volume. But perhaps the biggest news in the world of doping this week once again comes from the federal investigation of Lance Armstrong here in the United States. Couple of stories coming out this week. Number one, that French authorities are ready to hand over Armstrong's B sample from the 1999 Tour de France. Yes, 11 years ago. Thank you very much. And also, the Los Angeles Times is reporting that federal prosecutors have gotten their hands on a recording that Greg LeMond made of a telephone conversation that he had with a woman by the name of Stephanie McIlvain. McIlvain was working for Oakley. Of course, Oakley, one of the sponsors of Lance Armstrong throughout his career. This conversation was taped 6 years ago, and in it, Greg LeMond asks whether McIlvain will agree to testify against Armstrong about overhearing Lance Armstrong purportedly telling doctors that he had used performance-enhancing drugs. This is a similar conversation, or perhaps the same conversation, that Frankie and Betsy Andreu have talked about before, having heard Lance telling doctors when he was undergoing treatment for cancer about the litany, the long list of performance-enhancing drugs that they say he had used. When LeMond asked McIlvaine if she would ever testify or, quote, tell the truth if subpoenaed, McIlvaine at the time saying that she was hesitant to do so because of her relationship with Oakley. But the New York Times, meanwhile, citing, of course, quote, anonymous sources, unquote, said that McIlvaine is expected to testify as soon as next week before the grand jury in Los Angeles. One more thing. There is a purported transcript, or at least a reporting of a transcript, that is making its way around media sources. I found an article where it quotes Greg LeMond and McIlvaine purportedly on this tape. According to the quote, about 10 minutes into the tape, LeMond says, "I know what I heard from a source outside of the group here of what happened at the hospital. I'm not asking you to do anything you would never want to do, but, you know, if I did get down where it was, a lawsuit, would you be willing to testify?" And she says, "If I was subpoenaed, I would, I'm not going to lie, I was in that room. I heard it. My whole concern is my loyalties to Oakley. They say I was never in there, and I know I was there. You know, I totally know I was in there." Interesting stuff. Will be more interesting to find out whether or not it's true. When I say it, I'm talking about whether or not this transcript is true, and whether or not the overhearing of these conversations will be admitted as evidence. I'm no lawyer, but seems to me that this is hearsay evidence, and I don't know what the standard of proof is in this case. Nevertheless, it sounds pretty damning, but there are always two sides to every story. A couple of stories about bike thieves tonight. This one comes to us from Japan, from the Kyoto News. It appears that a 25-year-old man was recently arrested for allegedly stealing a bike in Tokyo in late August. He says that he traveled roughly 1,000 kilometers from Tokyo to where he was caught in Shimonoseki, Yamaguchi Prefecture, Japan. Otoya Muramatsu is unemployed and he has no address. He's suspected of taking the bike owned by a 15-year-old high school boy and worth about 30,000 yen. These days, with the cost of the yen and the dollar, that's probably worth about $5. That's a joke, folks. No, actually, that makes it about a $350 bike. Well, he was arrested after allegedly shoplifting in a shopping center. That's when they discovered that he had the stolen bike and that the guy had ridden this far, a Fred bike thief. Meanwhile, in Taiwan, police arrested a man for stealing a bike, and then they discovered that he was so poor that they decided to take up a collection and buy him a bike of his own. The man named Mr. Wong stole the bike from a high school near his home. Folks, here's two stories about high school kids whose bikes have been stolen. Make sure you go out and buy a good lock for your kids, would you please? Anyway, Mr. Wong stole the bike from a high school near his home in Jiayi City in central Taiwan, not too far from Taichung, to save his daughter from her daily 5-kilometer walk to the closest bus stop on her way to her school. Wong told his daughter that he bought the bike used, but after it was recognized by its former owner, both the father and the daughter were arrested by the police. But once the police heard about the awful conditions that the Wong family was living in, and as a matter of fact, they had no water or no electricity in their home, they took up a collection and bought a new bike for the girl. The story does not say whether or not charges stuck against Mr. Wong. And that's going to end the news for tonight's abbreviated pre-Interbike edition of the Fredcast. I got to tell you, I've got a couple of product reviews coming up on the next edition of the Fredcast. And just my apologies to the companies who have provided the product to me. It will be on the next show specifically as a preview. We will be reviewing the Fezzari 4A CR5 that I recently had a chance to test. and I had to give back last week. And I'm also going to be reviewing two iPhone apps, Bike Doctor and Bike Repair. Both are intended to help you repair your bike easier and give you easy tutorials on how to make those repairs to your bike. So those will be coming up on the next episode of the Fredcast. Well, I've got to go pack my bags and my microphone to get ready to head out to Las Vegas tomorrow. But before I do want to thank our show sponsor, Jensen USA. Don't forget to go to www.thefredcast.com and click the Jensen USA link anytime you want to shop for bike parts, accessories, apparel, and more. Don't forget, at Jensen USA, you're going to get great prices, great selection, and most importantly, excellent customer support. If you don't want to go to thefredcast.com, just go to jensenusa.com/thefredcast, and that's jensonusa.com/thefredcast. We thank Jensen USA so much for their support of the Fredcast, and we thank you for your support of Jensen USA. Well, don't forget, you can follow along with what's going on in the world of the Fredcast anytime by going to our website at www.thefredcast.com or by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/Fredcast or on Facebook at facebook.com/Fredcast. Of course, you can send us an email at any time at thefredcast@gmail.com or feel free to call the Fredcast listener hotline at area code 661-513-FRED. That's 661-513-3733. Well, there's just one more thing left to do tonight before I head off to Interbike, and that is to play our new track of PodSafe Cycling Music. And this week's PodSafe Cycling Music was chosen specifically for the Fredcast by the Cadence Revolution, your weekly podcast of PodSafe music that's perfect for your indoor cycling. Available at www.cadencerevolution.com. Tonight's track is by Jess Braun, and it's called Sometimes, and there are links in the show notes to Cadence Revolution, Jess Braun on iTunes, and also Jess Braun's website. We'll be back with another regular edition of the Fredcast after all of the craziness of Interbike next week, but I do want to thank you so much for listening and staying subscribed and for telling all of your friends about the Fredcast. Between this show and the next, enjoy the music. But most of all, enjoy the ride.
Sometimes I don't go to sleep till dawn. Sometimes I don't ask if I know that something's wrong. Sometimes I mistake life for a dream. Sometimes my memories are stuck somewhere in between. But I always, yes, I always keep on looking up. Gotta keep on looking up. Sometimes I turn off my telephone. Sometimes I pretend that I'm not home. And sometimes I call.
Yes.
question man's inhumanity.